Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Good evening, John.
Good evening, Ben. Hi, everybody.
As ever, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. You can also catch us live on the internet at dublincityfm.ie and also as a podcast. And we'll get straight into it. But First off, we'll get back to the good people in... it's a great week for astronomy in Ireland and for the good people in Galway University who've had a hand in discovering an exoplanet, which we'll go into in a bit more detail too, and also to the people here in DCU with the success of AirSat-1. We did have some of the crew in with us here last year, and they've made some great discoveries and progress with regard to orientating satellites in their orbits and making them more accurate. But anyway, we'll get to that in a moment. Well, first we'll start out with what to see in the night sky.
Well, what not to see, I think, is the ISS just at the moment, not back in our skies until September the 10th. And it will be floating around until September the 28th. So put that in your diary and hope for the best that you catch a glimpse of it. Well, hopefully every night, but if you don't, some of the nights as well. Fine article to see as well. Now, Mercury. It is visible, very low in the east northeast as dawn grows bright. Dawn grows bright. Its location is easy enough to find. Jupiter and Venus point down to it. And Mercury continues to swell in brightness from magnitude -0.5 to -1.2. That's a good
brightening.
Venus and Jupiter, both of them are in or near Gemini, shine in the east just before and during dawn. They're two brightest planets that are out there just at the moment, currently -3.9 and -2 respectively, which is pretty good. They're easily visible, and they went through, as we remember, a close conjunction on August the 12th when they were only just 1 degree apart, and by the 30th they'll be 18 degrees apart. Just proves how quickly they move in, well, we won't say the skies, but in space. And both are, at this particular moment, they're furthest away from Earth, so don't expect too much in a telescope as to, well, we'll call them surface features. Mars is a weak magnitude 1.6. It still glimmers very low in the west during the evening twilight. Binoculars, of course, will help. And Mars sets at twilight's end. It's two... and is about its farthest from Earth as well. It's amazing, really, how quickly they move away from Earth. So don't confuse orange Mars with the brighter, whiter Spica. That's easily done. So just remember that Mars is that orangey colour. Saturn, +0.7. It's in Pisces. It rises east in twilight. And it is just to the lower right of the great square of Pegasus, which stands in one corner, diamond fashion, of course. I suppose the best time to observe Saturn with a telescope is in the early morning hours when it's high toward the south. Yeah, I don't do an awful lot of early morning watching, I must say, except for if it's deep in the middle of the night early morning watching. But, yep, that's it. And Uranus, 5.7, and Neptune at 7.8. It lurks about 1.5 degrees from Saturn, but they're very, very difficult to see, so not really worth it unless you have a good telescope. So that's what's up there in the sky just at the moment.
Thank you, John, for that. Of course, we also have the Sun and the Moon, and the Moon at the moment is a 13% waxing crescent. So we're just past New Moon. It is currently above our horizon here in Dublin, and it will set just after 9 p.m. this evening, rising again tomorrow just before 11:30 a.m. and it will be due south and at its highest today at just about 4:30 tomorrow, and then sets tomorrow evening at 9:19, when by which stage it will have risen to a 20% phase as we head towards the first quarter moon, or 50% phase. That's on Sunday the 31st at 7:25 a.m. Just a heads up, and we will cover it in the next few weeks, there's going to be a partial lunar eclipse. That's going to be partial from Ireland here, and that's going to be on September the 7th. So get ready for that one. We will cover it in more detail next week. And the sun will rise tomorrow in Dublin at 6:26 a.m, 12 minutes earlier. Sorry, 12 minutes later than a week ago. Local noon, that's when the sun is due south, and at its highest, that's at 1:26 p.m. and sets at 8:25 p.m, which is a whole 16 minutes earlier than a week ago. And then we'll have various shades of twilight until 10:42 p.m. tomorrow evening, when nighttime officially begins. So we'll have 28 minutes less daylight than a week ago, another 4 minutes and 2 seconds less daylight tomorrow than today, when there will be actually 13 hours, 39 minutes and 30 seconds between sunrise and sunset. Oh, don't forget, don't know whether you mentioned it, John, tonight, that's Mars, that's Fortnite, to the upper right of the moon, before now, oh, yes, but it is quite, it's quite dull at the moment. And tomorrow morning, Jupiter's 5 1/4 degrees to the right of the moon, and six degrees below that. Venus, of course, being the brighter one. Oh, and if you're a lunar watcher, on Saturday at about 10 p.m. or 11 p.m, if you like to spot the lunar X and V,
oh, yes,
where the Terminator is, it looks right, like a giant letter X and a giant letter V. It's just the way the shadows fall on certain ridges and features on the moon. That's on Saturday evening at about 11 p.m. I'd say contact your local astronomy group. I'm sure there'll be lots of people out looking for that. And likewise, as I mentioned, with the September 7th partial lunar eclipse, contact your local, Google them, your local astronomy club. They will no doubt be out observing for that. And yes, as I mentioned, the ISS won't be available until, when did you say? Not a few weeks anyway.
It's, September the 10th.
September the 10th.
Oh, yeah, until the 28th, so just put that in your diary as well. Yeah, that's, I haven't seen the X and Y yet.
Neither have I. Well, I've seen pictures of it, the X and Y and X and V, and the snail, which you need a little bit of imagination now to make a snail out of it. But when somebody says, oh, look at this, that shape looks like a snail.
Yep.
A giant snail on the moon. You have to catch it at the right time, and the Terminator's in the right position.
Yeah, that's, I was just,
and of course you need a clear sky, and you'll need a reasonably good telescope too.
Yeah, it's pretty nice to see in photographs. I'll try and get it for Saturday, say. Saturday about 11. Now I'm going to look that up and just see if I can stay awake that long before I get up to watch the skies in the early hours of the morning. Now, we had a SpaceX delay again, unfortunately. This is Elon Musk's mega rocket. It's the Starship mega rocket, and it's delayed until Monday.
Well, it was delayed until, I think they had it was, and then it was postponed again because of the weather. I'm not sure whether they had rescheduled it yet again for today, but the weather has, I was going to say cancelled. It hasn't cancelled. It's postponed it.
Yeah, they also mentioned that there was a little liquid oxygen leak as well, which needed to be fixed, which is quite a good idea.
I presume that I think they had fixed that, and that's why they had rescheduled it for yesterday or today. But to the best of my knowledge, now it still hasn't launched because of the weather.
Yeah, and they haven't been too successful this year. They've had 3 failures this year so far, and 2 of the failed tests sent debris raining down over the Caribbean islands, which is not particularly good. And the other one reached space before breaking up as well. So they're getting there. It's just not happening the way that they want them at the moment. I suppose it's the new technology coming in, and they have to try these things. I wonder how expensive it is to...
Well, they're still quite positive. Yeah. They say that their successes have not exceeded the failures, but I think, wasn't it the last four have failed in one way or other. This flight is only planned to be about an hour long, apparently. And as you mentioned, it has exploded in all 3 previous test flights in 25.
Aren't the chopsticks things wonderful to watch? The way it catches the lower stage booster rocket. That's the one that really probably survives the most and gets caught. You should watch it if you haven't seen it. Yeah, this is well worth watching. It's just like two arms and it just catches the rocket as it lands, which means it's nice and gentle.
Yeah, it's
nice
landing back on a launch pad, almost like in reverse. But the hour-long mission had planned to put the rocket's upper stage through a series of trials before the lower stage booster splashed down in the Indian Ocean. But as I say, that's been postponed yet again. And with regard to something I think most of us are interested about, I think anyway, is the global warming, unless you're a denier. And of course, a lot of the evidence from Earth observation satellites show what's happening with currents, temperatures, cloud covers, amount of rain, the rising sea levels, and such like. But one of the things that's also been monitored, and we've covered this in the past as well, of course, is the recovery of the ozone layer, which is a great thing. But unfortunately, it does have a negative effect when it comes to global warming. As you know, the world is set to heat up more than expected because of future changes in the ozone. And, of course, the ozone shields the Earth from ultraviolet radiation. But apparently it also acts as a greenhouse gas. And although we have an international ban on ozone-depleting chemicals like the CFCs, and the ozone layer is repairing itself, and I think they reckon it will be completely recovered by about by the year 2050 or so. But apparently ozone is estimated to contribute about 0.27 watts per square meter of additional warming, which makes it the second most important driver of climate change by mid-century after carbon dioxide, which is forecast at 1.75 watts per square meter. But they're saying, even so, it's a good thing to ban it. This is mostly on where they're looking at the trends, and they've also plugged some figures, of course, into computers and done some simulations, and assuming that the ban on CFCs and such like stays, and there's not, and even with the current increase in other pollutants and greenhouse gases, that the Earth will still warm by, well, let's say more than is comfortable. But again, the bottom line is, it does, ozone, they say, will accelerate global warming, but all in all, it's on balance, it's good that we have a repair of the ozone layer, and it is getting small. It's like a big hole, and I don't know whether you've seen the images of the South Pole.
The South Pole in the Australia.
But I had it in Australia. I had it gone as far as Australia, and of course, because it protects us from the UV rays of the sun, if you're in a place where there's no ozone, then you're obviously then more exposed to UV radiation, and of course that's leads to a huge increase in the risk of cancer, amongst other things.
Yeah, it's a great little planet we live on, I think, because it's self-sufficient on helping people to survive and get on with it. Do you remember the 1987 CFCs? Before that, aerosols used to have chlorofluorocarbons,
yeah, yes.
It took them a little while to understand that they were a big contributor to the ozone, so they cut them out in 1987 in the Montreal Protocol, so they haven't been around. So glad to see the ozone is coming back as well. Big news, I suppose, Ben. A new planet.
Oh, yes, in which the good people in Galway were very much involved, and congratulations to the team there. I know it was led by a Dr. Christian Ginsky. He's a lecturer at the School of Natural Sciences of University, and also some PhD students and some MSc students. So congratulations to Chloe Lawler, Jack Byrne and Dan McLaughlin, who were some of the people involved. And they also got some help, of course, with some people of Leiden University in Belgium, and some extra observations done by some University of Arizona as well.
Yeah, they reckon it's 5 million years old.
Which is very young.
Where we're seeing it now, it's 5 million years later, so something has probably happened, so we have to wait another 5 million before we get to see what's happened. So it was just forming in those days, they reckon. And it's a big gas giant, similar to the size of Jupiter. And its name at the moment is WISPIT, WISPIT2B. Great news just in the last day or two, that's all. And it was discovered by the European Southern Observatory's Very Large Telescope. I love these things. ESO's VLT in the Atacama Desert in Chile. I have a name for it. Pluto.
Which?
Pluto. At least it's a decent-sized planet this time.
It's a big one. Apparently, it's about 380 astronomical units from its parent star. One astronomical unit being the average distance between the Sun and the Earth, so it's a long way out, and it does seem to be forming in a disk, and it's 430 light years away. So when we see it, you're seeing it as it was 430 years ago, and as you mentioned, John, it's only a mere 5 million years old. So they reckon it's still forming, gathering dust and other bits of material from the gas and dust cloud around this star, and it's still very hot even though it's 380 astronomical units from its parent star. So, well done to the people in Galway.
A couple of the names again: Chloe Lawler, she's a PhD student in physics, and she specialises in astrophysics at the University of Galway. Who else have we got? We've Jake Byrne. He's a student at university in Galway as well. Could hardly believe that it was a real detection. And it's great to see the Irish involved. They've always been involved somehow. And we don't get the credit, I think, in some of the cases that we should, but it doesn't really matter. They're all involved. So good luck to them on that one. So there was an unexpected detection, this one. And it has been hailed as a remarkable discovery, which is wonderful. Yes.
Well done to them, and we'll get on to the Irish CubeSat in a moment, I think, with the good people in UCD and DCU, if I'm not mistaken. But you're listening to The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and Ben Emmett. Our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. You can catch us live on the internet at dublincityfm.ie and also as a podcast.
Yeah, don't forget the website, because you can catch everything that's on and going on during the week here on Dublin City FM. Now, stuffy noses is what it's all about. Astronauts seemingly get very stuffy noses in space because of the microgravity. And this is according to scientists all over the place. New research finds bothersome nasal symptoms don't stay here just on Earth. They are up into space as well. And these scientists are calling attention to an extremely common health problem that's been making astronauts uncomfortable with sinus issues. And this research comes from Houston Methodist Hospital's Department of Otolaryngology or something like that. It's very hard to pronounce these words. Otolaryngology. I'm going to have to practice that one. I'll get somebody to say it. We'll Google it. As head and neck surgery reported that the results of the recent study had probed whether astronauts experience sinonasal issues, which include common symptoms such as the nasal congestion that we get down here on Earth as you get a cold or just a hay fever. And things like that, which is pain or pressure in the face. And they reckon that 60 out of 71 astronauts. Why did they pick that number? 85% astronauts included in the study confirmed having such symptoms. So like any research thing, 103 people out of 120. You know, that type of thing. So it's really weird. So they'll get to the bottom. This is quite new. I won't call it technology, but it's a new study onto why people have sinus problems in space.
Thank you, John. Now we'll just get back to the good people in DCU, but UCD. they ersat 1, which we mentioned, and we have had some of the people here in the studio last year who were involved in that. ersat 1 is Ireland's first satellite, and it has validated an onboard what they call wave-based control payload that enables accurate attitude control in orbit. Was developed in UCD, and the software-led experiment demonstrates advanced manoeuvring techniques on a live spacecraft rather than solely in simulation. The team demonstrated that a novel control strategy can operate reliably in orbit and paved the way for developing satellite orientation control for missions with tight constraints such as optical communication. So basically, you can position your satellite more accurately and move it, position it more accurately and be exactly where you want it to be and in the right orientation also. That's quite technical stuff, but they've done a great job and well done to the team there. And as far as I know, the satellite is still in orbit. The orbit is decaying, and I think they told us that it would be crashed by, well, it will burn up in the Earth's atmosphere in either a few months or maybe next year.
Now, the James Webb Telescope, always in the news in some way, it's uncovered 300 mysteriously luminous objects. Are they galaxies or something else? That's the question. And this discovery could challenge current ideas how galaxies formed in the early universe. And hundreds of unexpectedly energetic objects have been discovered throughout the distant universe, possibly hinting that the cosmos was far more active during its infancy than astronomers once believed. So they use a thing called deep field images from NASA's James Webb Telescope, otherwise known as the JWST, and researchers at the University of Missouri identified 300 unusually bright objects in the very early universe. So as they go through time, they're just getting to see further and further back, closer to that big soup that there was in the beginning. So, and galaxies forming so soon, of course, they reckon if even a few of these objects turn out to what they think they are, our discovery could challenge current ideas about how galaxies formed in the universe, in the early universe. It's a little bit over my head anyway, that one. Yeah, but you'd love to see through one of those telescopes. No, they take it in a completely different light, like an infrared light, because it's the slower wavelength, but they convert them into pictures so we can see them. But so it wouldn't be brilliant to be in the Atacama Desert in Chile or somewhere just looking at a new discovery like this.
A dark sky.
Oh yeah, amazing. That dark sky would be brilliant.
Yes, well, we only have to go to Kerry or Mayo for dark skies. And there are two dark skies, official dark skies in the country. I was looking at that word you mentioned. I think it's otolaryngology, after the larynx, which is, of course, is part of the ENT system.
And you look at these words and say, oh, my goodness.
How do you pronounce that?
No wonder you were looking for the page from me there.
I'll
have a go with it.
Yeah. Certainly. There you go.
Oh, it's coming back now. Oh, goody. It's otolaryngology. There you go
now. Break it down. Meanwhile, far, far away, you know, the New Horizons aircraft, which was many years ago, is that in orbit now? But that's, anyway, last August the 7th, not so long ago, mission controllers at the John Hopkins Applied Physics Laboratory confirmed that the New Horizons had safely entered another hibernation mode. So they put it into hibernation. Not the first time they've done that. But I thought the interesting thing about this was that the aircraft is now 9.2 billion kilometres away, which is nearly 6 billion miles. And it's in the Edward Kuiper Belt. And they have, as I say, put it into hibernation, and the confirmation signal required, it takes 8 hours and 31 minutes to reach Earth, travelling at the speed of light. So you send the command, and because it's so far away, and although the signal travels at the speed of light, it takes over 8.5 hours to get there, and then the spacecraft does its thing and send the message back saying, yeah, I've done that. And of course that takes another 8.5 hours for the signal to come back. Now, this marks the start of the longest hibernation in the spacecraft's history, and it's expected that it will be in hibernation until late June of next year, 2026. And apparently a lot of this depends on the budget, but it's a long period, and it surpasses the previous record of 273 days, which was set between June 2022 and March 2023. Now, though, John, although it's in hibernation, it will continue to collect data, collect science data around the clock on its three instruments, mostly monitoring charged particles in the outer heliosphere and the dust and dirt in the Kuiper Belt, and those measurements and data will be stored and the data sent back once it's reactivated in next March, or next June rather, in 2026. So the reason why they do this is because it reduces the operating costs, extends the spacecraft life, and apparently while it's in this mode, the spacecraft spins in a stable configuration with most systems powered down, and its onboard computer oversees health checks, does its little diagnostics now and then, and transmits a weekly beacon tone through the deep space network to confirm that everything is operating as normal. Yes, it was launched back in 2006. That's 19 years ago. And it's already entered hibernation 23 times, sometimes from a few days and sometimes for many months. And as I mentioned, it was just put into hibernation this month and will be reawakened in March or June of next year.
Now, last Tuesday, August the 20th, thereabouts, a flashing fireball dashed across the skies of western Japan because it was 11 o'clock in the evening. It shocked a few residents and dazzled stargazers, though experts said it was a natural phenomenon and not just an alien invasion, which is quite good. Don't want those. Unfortunately, it happened at 11 p.m. at night in Japan, which is 1400 GMT, which is just 2 o'clock in the afternoon, so there was no possibility. Although, during day, with something that bright, you could possibly see it in daylight as well. So they reckoned this white light had never been seen before. It came down from above, and it became so bright that they could hardly see the shapes of the houses around them. So some people said it seemed like daylight just for a moment. And it's interesting. So I wonder what that was. And some people reported to feel the air vibrate as well. So, and they also say it was as bright as the moon. So a little bit more looking around the internet for that particular one. And just before we go, which is not too far away, there's a fossil object, 2023 KQ14. And the reason I'm bringing that back in, because this was discovered between March to August 2023. It's one of these which challenged the Planet 9 theory with unique distant orbit that it follows, a big dark planety type thing. And it was discovered through the Fossil Survey Project. And the object designated, as I say, 2023 KQ14, was identified in observations from March to August 2023. Now, fossil stands for Formation of the Outer Solar System. And its wide field capabilities of the Subaru telescope to explore distant solar system bodies. Subsequent follow-up imaging for the Canada-France-Hawaii telescope. Have we heard of that one before? Canada-France-Hawaii telescope, yes. In July 24, along with the archival data, enabled astronomers to map 2023 KQ14's orbit over nearly two decades. So here we go again. Have we got a Planet 9? Have we got another one forming way, 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 way out?
Thank you, John. That's all the time we have this evening. You can write to us anytime, any day, wherever you are in the world or in the wider universe. We'd love to hear from you, whether you're an earthling or or an alien. Our email address for that, any questions, queries, comments you may have, we'd love to hear from you. It's astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. That's astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. My thanks to John Dixon for his latest in news. But that's all from me, Ben Emmett, from this edition of the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. It's music all the way now until 2 a.m. because up next we have Dublin's greatest hits. And from 10 p.m. until midnight, Nigel Wood has his ear to the globe with his world music mix. And from midnight till 2 a.m, Dave Barry's mix of jazz, blues and soul with a program called After Hours. But please join myself and John at the same time. 7:30 p.m. next week, we'll be back with all the latest news from all corners and dimensions of the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening, and say good night, John.
Good night, John.
Good night, John.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.